Perspectives on Easter, a 1010 Thrive special. As I sit here in my chambers, reflecting on the events that have transpired, my mind is troubled. I cannot shake the rumors that have been circulating about a man named Jesus. They say he was a prophet, a miracle worker, and even the Son of God. And now there are whispers of his resurrection from the dead. But I'm getting ahead of myself. My name is Herod Antipater. You may know me from my nickname, Antipas. I was the third-born son of Herod the Great, born to his wife, Malthace. I became Tetrarch of Galilee and Perea upon the death of my father. I was the most capable and qualified of my father's children. This is why I was bequeathed Galilee, an important region with a significant Jewish population. However, I had to share my father's kingdom with my brothers Archelaus, Philip, and Lysanias. Perhaps the most incompetent of my siblings was Archelaus, who inherited the territories of Judea, Samaria, and Idumea. After about 10 years, he faced such opposition from his subjects that he was deposed by the Roman Emperor and banished to Gaul. After that, Judea has been ruled directly by a Roman prefect. I spent much of my early life in the court at Jerusalem. We lived in a palace on the western side of the city. It was a sprawling complex with multiple courtyards, audience halls, and living quarters, and it was built to rival the grandeur of the imperial residences in Rome. Here I was exposed to the political and cultural influences of the empire. I was just about 20 when I was installed by the Roman Senate and the Emperor Caesar Augustus, and like my father, I have administered several significant building projects, established close alliances with both the Roman authorities and the Jewish religious leaders, and have kept a firm grip on the reins of power. There have always been those who oppose our rule. When I came to office, Judas the Galilean was terrorizing the people of this region. He was a member of a group called the Zealots, who were known for their opposition to Roman rule and for their commitment to Jewish independence. Judas opposed the idea of paying taxes to Rome, and so the census that was called for by Augustus as a tool for the Romans to further exploit and control the Jewish people. He led an uprising that was put down by the governor Quintilius Varus. More than 2,000 rebels were crucified for their part in that rebellion. Today I am watching the merchants buying and selling in the marketplace of Tiberias, a city that I built and one that has become an important center of commerce, culture, and learning. From the balcony of my palace, I can see not only the marketplace, but also our theater and public baths. Although I have done much to benefit the Jewish people, my efforts have not always been appreciated. But that is not what is troubling me now. I am troubled by the Nazarene, and these reports that he has returned from the dead. I first heard about Jesus from my advisors. They told me of the crowds he had been drawing and the miracles he had been performing. At first I wondered if he might be John the Baptist returning from the grave to torment me. I had put John to death, cut off his head, and put it on a silver charger as a favor to my wife's daughter after she danced for me. This Jesus appeared to be drawing even larger crowds than John. I couldn't tolerate another troublemaker in Galilee. I wanted him dead or at least gone. Some Pharisees on my behalf told him to move to a different area or risk the consequences. Word came back to me that Jesus responded by calling me a fox and saying he would continue with his ministry. He dismissed me just like that. I did not let go of the notion that he should be killed. But as I learned more about what he was doing, I must confess that I was intrigued and I wanted to see him for myself. My chance came on a Friday morning during a time of significant political and religious tension in the region. Earlier that week, I had arrived in Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover, which is a major pilgrimage festival and an important time for Jewish leaders to gather in the city. I had just finished my breakfast when one of my servants came to tell me that a Nazarene prisoner was being sent to me by the prefect, Pontius Pilate. This prisoner was Jesus, and apparently he had been arrested in the middle of the night and handed over for execution by the Jewish religious authorities. Now, after having been tried by Pilate, he was being sent to me for my examination. I'm not sure why the prefect sent him to me. He may have been hoping that I would find Jesus innocent and absolve him of responsibility for making a difficult decision. He may have been trying to curry favor with me by sending me such an important prisoner. Whatever the reason, I wanted to meet this man, to talk to him. When he arrived, I was surprised by how unassuming he was. He didn't look like a threat to my power. Yes, he was tall, fit, and tan, and he had striking eyes. Still, he was dressed humbly, and he did nothing to resist the soldiers. I peppered him with questions. Can you perform some sign or wonder for me? It can be something simple. Make the jasmine plant over in that corner die and then restore it to life. Or heal the gash on your forehead. What can you do for me today to prove to me who you are? By what authority do you perform miracles? If you gave your disciples power to perform miracles, can you give me the same power? Why have so many people been following you? Are you the king of the Jews? If so, where is your kingdom? Where is your palace? Do you intend to depose me and take my palace? Do you plan to lead a rebellion against Rome? Are you working with other political or religious groups? Why do you teach in parables instead of speaking plainly? Do you believe that the temple in Jerusalem should be destroyed? Question after question, he remained silent. He did not avert his eyes. He did not slouch his shoulders. He did not flinch. I raised my voice. I clapped my hands. I walked around him. I got close to his face. No matter what tactic I used, he did not answer me. I got increasingly frustrated and then angry. By refusing to speak, was he making a statement about the legitimacy of my rule or the fairness of his trial? Or was his silence a deliberate attempt to frustrate my curiosity and undermine my authority? As I questioned him, the chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him of blasphemy and sedition. Still, after 2 hours of getting nowhere, I had my soldiers flog him, array him in a purple robe as befits a king, and sent back to Pilate. After all, the prefect was the one presiding over justice in Judea. He should be the one to pronounce a verdict. Pilate's judgment came a couple of hours later. He sentenced Jesus to die. But before he had Jesus taken to Calvary to be executed, he sent word to me and asked if I objected to this. I was surprised. Pilate and I had been at odds with each other for some time. That he would offer me the courtesy of weighing in on this decision was most appreciated. I responded that I had no objection. The Nazarene deserved to die. It has been just about 6 weeks since that fateful Friday. And in that time, there have been persistent rumors that Jesus is alive. It all started on Sunday when his body disappeared from the tomb in which he was buried. Then it is said that he made appearances to various people in Jerusalem and on the road to Emmaus. But there have been many reports that he has been seen in Galilee, on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, and more than once in the mountains. There is even a claim that he appeared to more than 500 people at once. I am returning to Jerusalem in a few days for Pentecost. I am not sure what I will find there. Could this man who preached a message of love and forgiveness have been the Messiah prophesied about in the scriptures? And if he's back from the dead, will he be seeking revenge on those who humiliated him, who gave the orders to nail him to the cross? Did I do the wrong thing? Did I reject the wrong man?